Russia votes no and kills the panel that oversees UN sanctions on North Korea.
Let me be clear to Russia. The sanctions regime remains in place.
More trouble for Israel in Gaza.
Israeli soldiers in Gaza have been posting photos and videos of themselves playing with lingerie, bare mannequins, and in some cases, both.
And Easter and the Olympics. Chocolatiers in Paris make a delicious mashup.
We're not expecting this, but I think it's a really nice idea. It's innovative, and it's different from what we could normally find in the shopping aisles for chocolate eggs.
Today is Friday, March 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
13 votes in favor, 1 vote against, 1 abstention.
Russia on Thursday vetoed the annual renewal of a panel of experts that oversees the enforcement of long-standing UN sanctions against North Korea. The move comes amid U.S.-led accusations that North Korea has transferred weapons to Russia for use in the war in Ukraine. South Korea's UN ambassador.
At this moment, Russia seems to be more interested in embracing or encouraging the DPRK for its provision of munitions and ballistic missiles for the conduct of war in Ukraine at the expense of nuclear non-proliferation regime and proper functioning of the Security Council.
The Russian ambassador to the UN made their case. He's saying, quote, we are convinced that it's high time for the Council to engage in reflection on updating the sanctions regime in respect of the DPRK. Our country repeatedly advanced ideas to that effect and tried to adapt the restrictions to the rapidly changing realities on the ground, unquote. Here's the ambassador from the UK.
The panel, through its work to expose sanctions non-compliance, was an inconvenience for Russia. It is deeply concerning that Russia, a permanent member of this council, has taken such action. But let me be clear to Russia. The sanctions regime remains in place.
So that's true. The sanctions remain in place. But now, the panel that investigates and reports any violations, with this vote, will no longer exist. So let's go deeper. Joining us now to talk about this is Greg Brzezinski from George Washington University. He's a professor of history and international affairs and the director of MA Asian Studies Program. Now, they have, as a council, the Security Council has approved this panel 14 years in a row with unanimous adoption. And today, Russia voted no, and China abstained. Why do you what do you think caused that change?
I would say, in terms of Russian motives, if you assume the worst, the issue is that the Russians, there's been arms transfers from North Korea to Russia that's in violation of the UN sanctions, and so Russia is trying to get rid of the monitors. The United States and other Western allies have claim that this is going on. North Korea and Russia deny it, but that's one reading you can have, that Russia is trying to basically block their own activities that violate the sanctions. Another possibility is that just in general, North Korea and Russia have moved a lot closer together as a result of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. The United States and its allies are, of course, mostly strongly opposed to what's going on in the Ukraine. North Korea has been one of the few countries that has supported it. And so it might also be read as Russia's way of thanking North Korea for being one of the relatively few countries that support it on the Ukraine.
Makes sense. And China?
I think North Korea has long played Russia and China off against each other, and China doesn't want North Korea to move so close to Russia that it's much closer to Russia than it is to China. So part of China's motive might have been to demonstrate, well, China is also sympathetic to North Korea. China has recently taken, China has recently been much, has been less supportive of UN sanctions on North Korea than it's been in the past. And of course, part of the context is also growing frictions between China and the United States. This has been, of course, on and off lately. But you know, Beijing's attitude towards the United States and towards cooperating with the United States on the North Korea issue is quite different than it was in, say, 2006 when the sanctions regime started.
The U.S. State Department says this will only embolden the DPRK to act with further impunity and move forward with these programs. Do you think that's true?
I think that North Korea has been moving forward with its nuclear weapons programs regardless of what the United Nations has done. I understand why the United States and others have wanted to sanction North Korea, but I don't think that the sanctions have ever really been very effective at preventing North Korea from doing what it wants to do. And if you just look at what it's done in the last decade or so, it's made very significant strides in terms of both its nuclear program, its missile program. So I don't know that the sanctions ever stop North Korea from doing what it wants to do. But at the same time, I think now that North Korea senses that it is more protected from international criticism by Russia and to some degree China, it's definitely not going to be decelerating in its progress anytime soon. I think the only thing that might, slow down North Korea is more efforts at rapprochement and engagement on the part of the United States.
Professor Greg Brzezinski with George Washington University. We're following these other stories from around the world. More than 100 kidnapped Nigerian students were welcomed back home by their local community in the northwestern state of Kaduna on Thursday after being freed by the army. Students and staff were abducted by gunmen from a school in the country's north earlier this month. Saudi Arabia has been elected to chair the United Nations women's body, the Commission on the Status of Women. Established in 1946, it's a global policymaking body dedicated to the advancement of women. It holds annual meetings to promote gender equality and women's empowerment. Colombia ordered the expulsion of Argentine diplomats from their embassy, citing denigrating comments by Argentine President Javier Milei about Colombian President Gustavo Petro. In a recent interview with the news channel CNN, which has not yet aired in full, Milei called Petro a terrorist, murderer, and communist. Another problem for Israel's conduct of the war in Gaza, Reuters, the news agency, has investigated numerous examples of Israeli soldiers posting photos and videos of themselves toying with lingerie found in Palestinian homes. Reuters correspondent Lucy Ha details what they found.
Toying with lingerie found in Gazan homes, holding a female mannequin atop a tank.
Guys, thank you, Hashem. I found a beautiful wife.
Israeli soldiers in Gaza have been posting photos and videos of themselves playing with lingerie, bare mannequins, and in some cases, both. The images have been viewed tens of thousands of times on social media. Reuters examined posts made by the IDF soldiers and was able to independently verify 8 posted on Instagram or YouTube. Human rights experts say the posting of such images is demeaning to Palestinian women. The mocking posts are a jarring visual record of the war in Gaza, at a time when a looming famine and destruction are intensifying world scrutiny of Israel's offensive. Reuters sent details of the verified posts to the Israeli Defense Forces. In response, a spokesperson said the IDF investigates incidents that deviate from the orders and expected values of their soldiers. The IDF didn't specify whether it was referring to any of the images highlighted by Reuters or whether anyone was disciplined. The Israeli soldiers identified by Reuters did not respond to requests for comment. Dror Sadat is a spokesperson for B'Tselem, an Israeli group that monitors human rights among Palestinians.
At the end of the day, it sinks down to the soldiers on the ground. So, you know, I'm repulsed by what I'm seeing, but I'm repulsed about the policy and about what's going on in Gaza in general. And I think it connects.
Israel launched a military campaign in Gaza in response to an attack by Hamas on October 7th. Israel says the Palestinian militants killed about 1,200 people and took 253 hostage. Both Hamas and Israel are being accused of war crimes. In a recent report, UN experts said there were reasonable grounds to believe sexual violence, including rapes, occurred during the October 7 attack by Hamas.
With regard to the hostages taken to Gaza, we found clear and convincing information that sexual violence, including rape, sexualized torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, has been committed against captives.
The UN also received information about sexual violence against Palestinians by the IDF in the West Bank. Both sides reject such accusations. The lingerie and mannequin posts do not compare in gravity to the alleged war crimes against women. But some legal experts say they still potentially breach Article 27 of the Fourth Geneva Convention on the Treatment and Rights of Civilians, particularly women, in wartime.
Reuters correspondent Lucy Ha. Haiti now needs 4,000 to 5,000 international police to help tackle catastrophic gang violence targeting key individuals, hospitals, schools, banks, and other critical institutions. The assessment comes from the UN rights expert for Haiti. Violence and instability in Haiti are also a threat to the journalists reporting at personal risk on the latest developments in the country. VOA's Robin Guess has that part of the story.
Fear, violence, and anarchy are spreading in Haiti. Gangs rule the capital and key infrastructure, including some ports, and block food distribution. And the journalists capturing their actions take a great risk. The dangers are not new for Haitian journalists. Narrowly surviving a gun attack in 2022, Roberson Alphonse fled to the U.S. Here's Roberson Alphonse, head of national news for the Haitian news outlet Le Nouveliste.
I hope that nobody will experience that, but it's highly possible that we have Haitian journalists. We have to move and hide or flee the country for their own safety.
Alphonse still covers Haiti, but from the safety of the U.S., where he is a fellow at the University of Michigan. Journalists in Haiti have been killed, kidnapped, and assaulted in the past 2 years. Media watchdogs say it is one of the world's most dangerous countries for journalists. Here's Artur Romeo, head of Latin America and the Caribbean for Reporters Without Borders.
Journalists are kind of caught up in this crossfire between the violence, gang violence, and this institutional crisis, and they are targeted when they are trying to cover this.
Journalists on the ground fear the situation is worsening and say there is no way to avoid one of the most treacherous assignments, covering the gang. Here's Ange Sherry, a reporter for the Haitian Times.
They don't want hurting the country. And if you say the wrong things to them, you might be their next target. So it's almost at the point it's a necessity to talk to the gangs. I want to say some people don't agree with it, but it can get also very dangerous.
The gangs aren't the only threat. Sandra Lemaire, VOA's Creole Service Chief, recalls an incident involving one of her reporters in Haiti. Here's Sandra Lemaire, who is the VOA Creole Service Chief.
And he was threatened by a national police officer at gunpoint, threatening him to say, don't publish this because it makes us look bad.
Lemaire says she checks in constantly with her team on the ground to ensure they are safe. Again, Sandra Lemaire, VOA Creole Service Chief.
My biggest fear is that they'll be killed while reporting.
With the gangs in control and progress slow in forming a transitional government, media analysts fear for the safety of the journalists on the ground. Robin Guess, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Turkey holds nationwide elections on Sunday, with longtime President Erdogan's AK party looking to regain control of Istanbul, Turkey's main city and his one-time stronghold. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the outcome of these local elections could set all of Turkey on a different path.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is leading the campaign by his Justice and Development Party, or AKP, to elect Murat Kurum as Istanbul's mayor in Sunday's poll. Kurum promises to build 500,000 new houses to protect Istanbul from the threat of earthquakes. Incumbent Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu of the main opposition, Republican People's Party, or CHP, is warning the return of AKP rule would result in uncontrolled construction.
Büyütülmüş sorunların çözümü için önemli.
İmamoğlu said, this election is so important to address the unresolved urban problems. It is important for the solution of these problems that have been magnified. İmamoğlu's shock election victory in 2019 ended Erdogan's 30-year domination of the city. It was possible thanks to a broad electoral alliance of a pro-Kurdish party and Turkish nationalists. Atilla Yeşilada is a Turkey analyst for Global Source Partners.
The opposition coalition has fragmented. Everybody and their uncle is showing a candidate. I think it's a testament to İmamoğlu's excellent capacity for campaigning to Murat Kurum's rookie mistakes.
Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
It's an important year for South Africa. Not only is the country marking 30 years since the start of its democracy, it too is an election year for South Africa, and observers say the polls will be the most fiercely contested ever. Kate Bartlett has our story from Johannesburg.
Palesa Musa was incarcerated at this former women's prison in Johannesburg in 1976, when she was just 12 years old, for her role in the struggle against apartheid.
The reason why I was brought here is because they found me in Winnie Mandela's house, where I was learning how to use AK-47 to defend my country.
She recalls her elation when Nelson Mandela was sworn in as the country's first black president in 1994. But 30 years later, Musa is disillusioned by corruption in the governing African National Congress Party.
You know what? Our country, I don't know. They just eat money. They don't care about those who put them in parliament. They forget about us.
Now, this once brutal prison is a museum and home to the Constitutional Court, and a human rights festival is held here every year with talks, art, and music. Many of the people attending this year are so-called born frees because they never knew apartheid. South Africa holds elections in May, and analysts say the youth vote could be a game changer if they turn out. 23-year-old Thabang Magakwe is excited to cast his ballot for the first time ever.
I registered to vote last year. I made sure, and I used my social platform, my Instagram, Facebook, my WhatsApp. Guys, vote, vote, vote. I want to see things changing in South Africa. Inequality, corruption. I want to see change. I believe in change.
He says South Africa's democracy is worth protecting for future generations. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And finally, in France, the coming Olympic Games have given the country that is more associated with dessert than sports the perfect opportunity to take traditional chocolate Easter eggs and transform them into sports-themed characters. Nicolas Clouseau is a chocolatier at La Maison du Chocolat.
L'inspiration de cette collection de Pâques 2024 me paraissait tout à fait évidente puisque c'était cette année en France une année dédiée au sport.
The inspiration for this Easter 2024 collection appeared quite obvious to me since this year is devoted to sports in France. So the process was to connect this year of sports as a nod to Easter through a strong symbol. And of course, that symbol is the egg. And so we transformed this egg into an object that symbolizes sports. And that's why this egg transformed into a timer and the characters became sack race athletes, bringing into mind the sacks of cocoa beans. So it's still linking themes that touch on our profession as chocolatiers.
Simon Darman is a shopper looking for the sweets.
I think it's a really, really good idea. It's surprising because we were not expecting this, but I think it's a really nice idea. It's innovative and it's different from what we could normally find in the shopping aisles for chocolate eggs.
And listen to this. That big egg piece with the clock and the eggs in racing sacks that he described cost $2,700. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been a year since American journalist Evan Gershkovich was arrested in Russia. Now a Russian court has once again extended his detention at least until the end of June. A reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Gershkovich was arrested by Russian authorities on March 29, 2023, in the city of Yekaterinburg, where he was on a reporting trip. Although accredited by Russia's foreign ministry to work as a journalist, Gershkovich was charged with espionage, a charge that he, his employer, and the United States government vigorously deny. He has been behind bars ever since, housed in the notorious Le Fordova prison. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller noted that at Gershkovich's hearing on March 26th, Russian authorities did not provide evidence of a crime.
They just extended his detention for another 3 months, and despite their claims, they have provided no justification for holding him at all. And we believe there's a simple reason for doing that. It's because he has done nothing wrong. It's because journalism is not a crime.
U.S. Ambassador to Russia Lynn Tracy attended Gershkovich's court hearing in Moscow. In a statement, she reiterated that the accusations against Evan are categorically untrue. They are not a different interpretation of circumstances. They are fiction. Ambassador Tracy said, "Evan's case is not about evidence, due process, or rule of law. It is about using American citizens as pawns to achieve political ends, as the Kremlin is doing in the case of Paul Whelan." Paul Whelan is an American citizen, former U.S. Marine and businessman, who was arrested in 2018 in Russia and in 2020 was found guilty of espionage after a secret trial. He is currently serving a 16-year prison sentence. The United States has called his treatment a mockery of justice. Both Paul Whelan and Evan Gershkovich have been determined to be wrongfully detained by the U.S. government. Spokesperson Miller called on Russia to stop using individuals officials like Evan Gershkovich or Paul Whelan as bargaining chips. They should be released immediately. He added, "We continue to remain engaged on trying to secure the release of both Evan Gershkovich and Paul Whelan. That will remain a top priority for us."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.